too drunk on comics.
Oh, God.
You spilled all over me.
Welcome back, honest, faithful people. I'd call you true believers, but I believe an old man already has that phrase trademarked. This is our podcast about comic books, the comic book industry, and other things nerdy. With us today, we have Derek.
Hi.
Tony.
Yo.
Kevin.
Well, hello there.
And myself, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
How you doing today, guys?
Good.
All right.
Hey, before we get going, I want to bring something up really quick. I had somebody send me a message, and they kind of questioned our whether or not we're doing true reviews, because we pretty much only talk about stuff we like. And so I just wanted to address that. What we do here, we do review books, but mostly this is us getting together to sit around and talk about the stuff that we like, the stuff that we would tell each other about anyway. And we're also here to promote the comic industry as a whole.
Yeah, we like to have a positive attitude, promoting some of the cooler things, if you will.
Well, not only that, but we pick up plenty of books. We're going to want to talk about the ones that we most enjoyed.
Yeah.
Not the ones that we thought were dumb, because we want them.
Isn't it just easy to talk about stuff you don't like?
It is easy. It's actually, I got to admit, it'd be a lot easier when I'm picking through the stuff that I read each week. Go, this is crap, you know. Because
let's talk about it.
Yeah. So we're doing the hard work for you.
Yeah. And plus, we want people to go out and pick up stuff that they may not have read. I mean, that's really what we're here to do. So if you have other suggestions, by the way, of stuff you want us to read, let us know. If we like it, we'll talk about it. If we don't, well, you might.
It'll become a footnote or a joke.
Yep.
All right. So starting off today, we're going to do our weekly segment, Off the Shelf. Talk about some of the new comic books that have come out this week, or maybe ones that have come out in the last 2 weeks. Sometimes we're a little behind. Today, Off the Shelf is brought to you by Detroit Fanfare, October 26th through 28th at the Hyatt Regency in Dearborn, Michigan.
Which we'll be at.
Which we will be at, so you should come check us out there. You can also check out DetroitFanfare.com. They're also on Facebook and Twitter, so there are our
official sponsor.
Yeah, our official sponsor. And bringing you today's Off the Shelf. So starting you off, Tony, what did you read recently?
All right. This one's going to be a little bit different. I picked up Transformers Fall of Cybertron. And when I say picked up, I downloaded it. It right now is a 99-cent download comic on Comixology. It's pretty much, it's a prequel to the new video game that's coming out, and it talks about the rise of the Dinobots. So kind of tying in with the game, which I've seen previews look pretty sweet.
I don't mean to interrupt, we almost forgot. We're a spoiler-heavy show.
Yeah, spoiler-heavy.
So if you don't like spoilers, pause, go read your books, then come back. So,
okay, go on, Tony.
Ruin away, Tony.
All right. So like I was saying, it's a digital comic. It's coming out every other week right now. It's a six-part mini-series. I love Transformers. I still got a lot of them. And I love anything from 80s shows, anything that from back in the day when they get back into the lore, the mythology of things, and you kind of see more backstory to some of these things that you grew up with loving. And whether it's just old 80s cartoons, or anything really in that matter.
Are you watching Prime or any of the other newer shows?
I've watched a couple of them.
There's a few of them I've watched too, and they're okay. They don't blow me away. Not like the early shows.
I recently just rewatched the whole Beast Wars series on Netflix. And I remember that, okay, this was better when I was a kid, but...
Yeah, well, I know everyone was wet over Beast Wars when it came out, and I just never...
Apparently, I'm the outsider on that one, because I started to watch it and went,
Yeah, I could just never... I just could never get into it.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, the comics that they've been coming out with recently... have been a lot darker. There's been a couple other series to explain the past, how Megatron came about, how Optimus Prime became a Prime. A lot of those things, really interesting if you do love Transformers. And I picked this up, or downloaded it, mainly because it was only 99 cents, and it was something that I enjoyed, but it was also something different from the normal Marvel that we keep downloading. Yeah. And IDW has kind of the rights to the Transformers series, and there's a bunch of them going on right now. I highly suggest picking up a couple of the other ones. I've skimmed through some of them. I just can't afford all of them. This one, like I said, was overall cool because it's talking about the Dinobots and when they were. takes away a little bit from canon of Dinobots being made and created in the 80s cartoon there on Earth. But you have Grimlock, who's awesome.
No, okay. You got to know Tony's love obsession with Grimlock. He named his half-orc druid in our Dungeons & Dragons campaign after Grimlock. In fact, he even spoke with the broken English.
Your nerd quotient just went up by like 40%.
I know. I was hiding that nerdiness.
Not well, Tony.
Yes. Overall, the look of it was cool. The art was cool. It was written by John Barber. Pencils by Dheeraj Verma. Sorry, as we say all the time, we sorry for if we mispronounce your names.
Or slaughter them sometimes, as it may be.
I'll say this. I was a little disappointed at first because it was short. But then I started realizing it's coming out every other week and it's only 99 cents. So that makes it a good deal.
Do you know roughly how many pages? I mean, when you say short.
I think it was like 11 or 12 pages.
Is there a lot of ads in the middle of it?
No.
So it almost feels like it equivalents out to a real comic book.
Yes.
Well, no, but the average comic is 22 pages of art.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 99 cents every other week, 22 pages, that's a $1.99 comic or $1.98 comic.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a decent deal. Yeah.
So, like I said, that's all I got to say for it. Pick it up. It's good.
Awesome.
And if you like Transformers, you'll like it even more.
That's our first digital comic recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, I'm going to take over from here. The book that I'm going to talk about this week is Saga number 6. This is from Image Comics. It's written by Brian K. Vaughan and art by Fiona Staples. This is a series that has blown up. I mean, for a book that's only come out, 6 months ago, this thing's taken off. One I've actually wanted to talk about for a while, but it's just been so very involved, it's kind of hard for me to do that. For you guys, because I don't think any of you guys have actually started reading this one yet, the little bit of background for you, it's a universe where there are two rival races that are at war with each other, and they're former enemies, a male from one side and a female from another side, that have fallen in love and have produced, a mixed race baby between them. Kind of a Romeo and Juliet type of thing, if you will. But now both sides of this war want this baby. And there are other people outside the war that want this baby for whatever reason. And the main characters, Marco and Alana, they are just trying to get away from everything, get far enough out in the universe where this war is not happening, because they just want to raise their baby and live their life in peace. They're also, along with them in this issue, there's a ghost by the name of Isabel. And on this one planet where they were at, their people that have been killed, they were basically like casualties of the war, are there. And they're still in their gruesome how they died form. So there's this little girl ghost who's probably like in her teens, early teens, named Isabel, and she's only whole from the waist up, and like her intestines are hanging out below.
Hmm.
It's pretty nasty. She's bonded with the baby, and now they are leaving the planet in a rocket ship from the rocket ship forest. So it's a rocket that's a spaceship that's made out of a tree that grows. It's really cool.
Fun.
There's a guy in here who's a bounty hunter whose name is The Will. And he's only seen briefly in this episode. There's another bounty hunter by the name of Stock, who's kind of a spider-like woman. When I say spider-like, I mean she has like, the whole bottom body is of a spider, top part. Apparently, he was in love with her at one point. She got killed in the last issue. He's vowing to kill her. The book ends where Marco and Alana, the baby, and Isabel, the ghost, have taken off, and they get attacked inside the ship by people. Turns out to be Marco's grandparents. They may have killed the ghost, Isabel. I don't know. I don't know if ghosts can die. But
have you seen Ghostbusters?
Yeah. Do they have big particle accelerators on their back and a little trap?
They did shoot her with something, but I don't really know. Okay. And she obviously reacted to it. The reason I bring this up, and there's a lot going on in this book, and the background of this book is awesome. I'd really recommend going and picking them up. And the first few issues of this really blew me away, and there's some actually really shocking things in the first issues. This book didn't do that, but it's not a bad thing. And it's basically because I'm starting to get settled in with this book. I'm starting to become more familiar with the characters, the world, the kind of stuff that goes on. you know, it's just going to happen. You know, when you read a book long enough, I mean, X-Men, when we first read it as kids or saw the cartoon for the first time, we're like, wow, look at that guy, look at that guy. Now it's like, you better have something pretty fucking spectacular for us to get that. Vaughn has done a really good job creating an ensemble cast of characters in this book, and he does a good job helping keep them straight. The dialogue's believable. The level of emotion is easily conveyed. Fiona Staples has an amazing style to her art, and her work on its own still floors me. Overall, the book is just a total gem because this pair of creators together have created a really well-rounded book. This book, like I said, I mean, there weren't any beheadings. There wasn't any nudity or graphic sex like there has been in the past. oh, you guys laughed. There was a sex planet called Sextillion, and like. The stuff that they showed in there was crazy. Like in the offside of one panel, there was like a guy in a Barney type dinosaur outfit that had a giant dildo coming off the front of it. So yeah, it's a little messed up, but you know, this book is probably the least shocking out of all of them, but it's a solid book because it seems to be setting up the next story arc and also finish off the last one. The reason that I'm bringing this book up now is because it's a really good jumping on point, I think, for people. You know, if you've been not sure about it, if you, for whatever reason, don't want to go back and read the first issues, now's a good time to jump on. I don't think you'll be lost at all because they give enough of it. Back issues, though, still fairly easy to get because last I saw, they were on, I think, the fourth or fifth printing of the first issue already.
Oh, wow.
And all the issues have had at least a second printing. So, go pick it up. I mean, the series, it's gut-wrenchingly beautiful in a lot of ways. And, you know, it makes me wonder why all books can't be this good. So, that's what I had.
Cool. I'm a week behind, as life catches up with me oftentimes. But I would like to review the New Avengers number 29, which could have probably been any Avengers title that they really wanted, because it's not really the New Avengers, it's the Illuminati. The Return of the Illuminati.
Ooh.
And if you're not familiar with the Illuminati, they're kind of the heads of the superhero community that get together and kind of decide the fate of the world. They're really big in the secret invasion. And in one of the Avengers arcs, one of the big things to know is that they have the Infinity Gems on Earth. And each one of them has hidden one of the six Infinity Gems. The members are made up of Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Mr. Fantastic, Charles Xavier, Namor, and originally it was Black Bolt, but since Black Bolt's been off-planet, Captain America has stepped in and taken over this in part of the secret group. What I like about this one is that it's kind of a piece that draws in a lot of the missing pieces of the puzzle for the people who really love the continuity of the Marvel Universe and ask yourself questions like, gee, if this all-powerful Phoenix Force is coming after him, why don't they just use the Infinity Gems to fight it?
Why don't they?
Well,
one of the things is Namor's got one of them.
Namor's got one of them. Yeah. Namor being one of the Phoenix Five, and this takes place while Namor still has his Phoenix powers, pretty much it starts off... We'll get to answering your question, why don't they use it, in just a second. What I didn't like about this one is it starts off with a World War II... flashback where Namor and Captain America are fighting together just so that they can show that those guys are buds. In fact, they're brothers of war. This is simply so that they can show Captain America and Namor having this, you know, we'll agree to disagree at the end. Captain America brings the Illuminati together because he wants to try to talk sense into Namor and get him to turn against the Phoenix Five. Namor shows up at the very end to just say, I trust you and that's why I came, but I'm glad this wasn't a trap. Lucky for you, it wasn't, and I'm not going to change. And
did he say it in the Admiral Akbar? It's a trap.
It's a trap! No, and he wasn't even dickish enough to really constitute him being Namor. I mean, that's the thing that, I guess, you know, Namor's gone through all these changes, and yeah, sure, he was Captain America's brother back in World War II, but Namor's such a dick that Namor could just flip him the bird now and be like, what? How's Captain America and Namor going to reconcile their brotherhood after he just flooded Wakanda?
Who wrote and drew this one?
I'm sorry. Bendis, being the archetype of the event, he wrote this one. And the art is from Mike Deodato.
Mike Deodato?
Yeah, Deodato. Yeah, that's an O. It looks like a D on the cover, but It's a no.
Yeah.
All right. So that's what I didn't like about it, is this whole relationship with Namor and Captain America, which I just felt was a little forced. The rest of it, though, it gives motivations for each of these Illuminati characters and how they feel about things and answers a lot of questions. The number one that was on my list was, why aren't they using the Infinity Gems? And the reason is they say, we're not going to use one cosmic powerful force of destruction to fight another one. Think of how the whole universe could be affected if you destroyed the Phoenix Force by using the Infinity Gems. It's the same reason why when they got the Infinity Gems together last, they didn't wish it out of existence, like Iron Man said he did, because there would be a backlash to that. And so okay. I kind of like that. Maybe it also would draw the attention of, I don't know, other cosmic threats like Thanos, letting them know where the Infinity Gems are at. So good choice for them to not use it. So there's not much action in this one. It's mostly guys sitting around a table. Iron Man is being pushy and kind of a dick, which was, you know, funny. He's got a lot of nice one-liners. Great motivation. Xavier comes in, and he's like, I know you guys all blame me for this. They were my students. Why did they go wrong? And they're like, no, we're not blaming you for this. And he's like, I'm reading your minds. You're blaming me for this. And they're like, that's against the rules of our council here. You're not supposed to read our minds. He goes, I don't care. You blame me for this. And I blame myself, too. Screw you guys. Strange is like, hey, I'm just here to help, and doesn't look like much help I can do, so I'm out of here. The fun one was Mr. Fantastic, who comes in, and I've been wondering how come the Fantastic Four haven't been battling the Phoenix Five.
Or on either side, for that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, because the thing is a new Avenger, and I can see him just wanting to punch stuff. But Reed is saying that he's been doing the math, and it adds up that the Phoenix Five are doing some good. So he's kind of like...
Interesting.
He says, you know, I used to... They said, but this isn't natural. He goes, you know, I used to argue that all the time. He goes, but really, I don't know what's natural anymore. Maybe this is the way that it's supposed to happen. So he says, I'm not going to stop you guys, but I'm also not going to help you. And so it's left them with kind of a schism in the Illuminati, is a couple of the members are mad at each other. Some of the members see a different path.
So is this a prelude to a Fantastic Four schism?
No, we have those every 2 years. I think we just had one, so we got another couple years.
Okay.
But yeah, so that was those are the big reveals, and like I said, it's kind of a character piece. It gives you some motivation as to why some of the things haven't happened the way that we would like to have seen them. Also, Charles Xavier has been really active in the AVX recently, and so much as he's basically said, I will shut you down, Scott, if I have to. So there's probably going to be a big battle involving Charles Xavier and his former students here sometime in the near future.
Which I would actually kind of hope to see.
I think so. Like Xavier's real torn about the fact that this wasn't the dream that I envisioned, you just having more power than the humans and therefore lording it over them.
Ever since he's been able to walk, he's turned into kind of a badass.
Yeah, he has. I like it. Well, and even so much in the AVX, Magneto is going around New Utopia and seeing what a bitch Emma Frost is being. And at the very end of it, he just kind of walks down and he's like, Xavier, we really need your help. And so even Magneto is saying they're going too far. And if Magneto thinks you're going too far, you're probably... So
you think Professor X has become kind of more of an asshole now that, you know, not only can he walk, but I'm assuming his dick works again?
He always made you believe that his penis worked.
Well, but deep down he knew, and we knew, and that's all that matters.
Did you just recently start walking, or is this...
No, this is kind of the whole aftermath of the House of M, where there's no more mutants.
Okay.
And he got shot up, or did he get... He got shot in the head after Hope got born, right, in Messiah.
Yeah, he got complex. Shot and then got re...
Exodus brought him back together.
His DNA particles.
He rebuilt his brain, and so he had some missing memories. And he's been able to walk, though, for a while. And I think in a world where you've got superheroes and Iron Man is making new armors every day, I think it's only fitting that they could probably fix the spinal injury of Charles
Xavier. Well, and who knows? Maybe he got some cool knee braces from Wayne Industries.
they're tied right into his suit.
Yeah.
All right, Tony, you had another one this week.
I picked up Wolverine 311, which comes after Wolverine 310 in numerical order. Just spoiler alert there.
What's after that?
Well, you know, it's weird, though, because they released 310, but then the next week was... 308 and then at 309 or I don't
know. The reason why they did that, actually was I found out, yeah, they pushed the run on this new storyline with Sabretooth coming back, but they rushed it ahead of time of Comic-Con. So they wanted to release this story arc first when they had the finishing of the previous one. It was one of those things of Marvel, really, you're trying to cash in and you're screwing up with
pushing,
the order.
You're pushing a little hard.
Yeah. Because, I mean, on itself, I think people picked up 310 anyways. It was freaking sweet that Sabretooth came back, even though you're kind of wondering, but we saw the skull, we saw that he was buried, what the heck's going on? It's going to continue to try to figure out what the F's going on.
And I bought this, and I still haven't read it, so you're totally going to spoil it for me, which is fine.
Yeah, I'm going to spoil it for Matt, too, so screw you guys for all the time.
Pretty much,
as it states in the beginning, Romulus is back. Sabretooth is reborn, and some mysterious chick is helping Wolverine. Getting into that, it's a pretty big battle. Wolverine fighting this head Sabretooth Alpha, with all these other clones in this Weapon X facility.
Is he a Sabretooth Prime?
Yes, he's a Sabretooth Prime. Alpha, Prime, the beginning, not Omega, the end.
Do all these other Sabretooth clones, are they much weaker than Sabretooth, and they only have, like, one hit point, so Wolverine can just kill them quickly?
Yes, he can just do that.
Okay, good. Then I believe this battle.
Not every nerd that reads comic books understands your D&D references, Matt.
I love seeing Tony get irritated.
But they played enough video games to get the fact that, okay, surrounded by a lot of Sabretooths, Wolverine must be killing a lot of them.
Oh, yeah, and killing he does. He gets helped by this chick. The Sabretooth Prime runs away. He's chasing after him. He blows up a plane into the facility, so he comes off all, you know, hurting and healing. The thing was this. It was good until the part, and spoiler alert, this chick is Remus. Who's Remus? Romulus's sister. Romulus has been the architect in the last 6-10 years of Wolverine's past. He is, what they've gone into is, Romulus is the alpha of all Wolverine, Sabretooth. It was a good series, and I forget when it was, that explained that there's a lot of feral type mutants out there.
Wolfsbane. What's her name?
Hepzibah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. A lot of wild child, like all these ones that have like a feral instinct, I can't get a better word than that, that they're somehow related, and there's somehow that down the line something happened in the past for some of these people. What you find out is Romulus has been the key architect. They've gone back so far as he's the creator that has pitted Wolverine versus Sabretooth against each other, because when he wants one of them to pretty much ultimately kill him and take over this faction that he's created of this shadow government.
But like any good predator, you need the alpha to step up and take him out. So you put Wolverine and Sabretooth against each other until one of them is strong enough to kill the other, and that's how he chooses.
So that's Romulus. When that first came out, it was an awesome reveal. It was pretty sweet storytelling. It was one of those things, flip Wolverine's world, you know, around, and it made kind of sense. You start going back through some of the past things that have gone in his life that readers have gotten to kind of know a little bit about his past, and you kind of seen this guy in the shadows that kind of did these things, pulled these strings, and it makes you think, wow, Wolverine's life just wasn't just, you know, shit happened to him, and it was someone fucking with him. That was cool. Now that Sabretooth came back, it's kind of like, okay, it's a clone. No, what you find out in this is that this is the true Sabretooth. Who he killed was a clone.
Oh.
Which, yeah, that's kind of like...
This is me, but that's just kind of a weak way to bring somebody back, is that he killed the clone.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've talked about this before. Everybody dies, everybody comes back, but...
But then, like I said, the biggest thing is you find out this chick who's helping him out, and then she reveals who she is. I'm Romulus's sister.
All right.
Yeah, now you're kind of pushing the bounds of...
What I don't like about that is, okay, Romulus, cool name, but now you give sister or sibling named Remus, and all I'm thinking about is, didn't Romulus hit her in the head with a shovel so that they can name Rome instead of Reem? Because Romulus and Remus were the brothers that built Rome. in ancient mythology.
See, all I'm thinking about is Uncle Remus from Song of the South, the old racist Disney movie. You know?
Sorry, I'm thinking
history. You know, that's all. When I hear Remus, that's what I...
So I can't say enough of how much this disappointed me, who this person was.
So much for us talking about stuff we like.
But, no, the one thing is this, though. Because I love Wolverine and the stories that I've read in the past with Romulus and all of these things that are going on mentally with him, it intrigues me still enough that I'm still going to be picking up this series. I don't really care to know who she is, but at the same point, I want to know who she is. I want to know why she hates this guy that has been effing with Wolverine his whole life, why she hasn't shown herself before, and really, does she have claws? Does she have healing factor? Does she have part of that
claws trait? Fake like Romulus's?
Is she a clone?
Ooh.
Or is she the real one, and she's got a clone out there?
Well, yeah, but she might be Romulus's clone, like X-23 is Wolverine's clone.
Ooh.
That very well could be. Overall, I was disappointed, but I still enjoyed it. The artwork was amazing. The writer was Jeff Loeb, and pencils, Simone
Bianchi.
Yeah. So, which they've been doing these runs anyways.
They've been beautiful.
Yeah, Bianchi does some great work.
And I do, I have like Loeb's story, so I'll give him some slack here.
So what you're saying is it's good, but your expectations were so damn high that it was not even
the expectations, it was just kind of like, that was the reveal of this one. I was kind of like, I was hoping for something a little bit more. I was hoping that this person was be someone from his past that he killed or something.
Just killed their clone in the past.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, that makes sense. Before we move on, there are three books that I wanted to talk about, and I'm only just going to mention them by name that are worth going out and getting. Two we talked about the last 2 weeks: Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, number 3 of 4. That's done by Cohen Bund, Dalbert Tolagic, and Lee Loffridge. Another book not for kids we talked about last week is Dead World War of the Dead number 3 by Gary Reed and Sammy Mackinnon. Both weekly series. Awesome. Go pick those up. The other one I want to mention, I was shocked by. I picked it up today on a whim. He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 1 from DC. James Robinson, Philip Tan, and R-U-Y? I don't know. Jose? So, anyway, I was more than pleasantly surprised. So if you liked He-Man, go buy that.
By the power of Grayskull.
So that's it for Off the Shelf today, which, as one more reminder, was brought to you by Detroit Fanfare. We're going to move on now to Mr. Kevin with Kevin's Letterbox.
I'm still here, everybody. Yeah, I'm just kicking back because, honestly, like I can't tell you the last Marvel title I picked up. So it's kind of interesting.
Here, you want to hold this? He just picked up Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe number 2.
Knowing what's in the past, and a lot of these characters you're mentioning are all just brand new. I mean, I've heard passing
you've heard of Wolverine like once or twice. Yeah. Namor.
Yeah, he dresses in a yellow and blue suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone this weekend was asking me who Namor was, and they were getting confused with him with this Aquaman. They're like, no, isn't
Aquaman?
Aquaman. Namor's DC, right? And I'm like, no. Namor is truly Marvel.
Is he referred to as a Submariner?
Yeah,
he used to, and like when he had his own title. Now it's just Namor, usually the jerk,
King of Atlantis,
Imperius Rex.
Yeah,
yeah. All right. So anyway, Kevin's on box.
So we're gonna step back in time, and last week. During the podcast we did, we talked about Superman Family Adventures, and that was a great title. Everyone should check that out for just a quick fun read. Well, I'm going to go a complete 180, and I'm going to talk about myself and how I'm such a big pervert,
and no longer for the family, but maybe just for daddy.
Or
maybe just for mommy too.
This is for mommy for sure. there's some woman empowering things in this book. Well, I busted out partially because I was horny and I needed some content for this show. Cherry number 11. Now, now you guys ever heard of Cherry Comics?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Not until today.
You guys hadn't, really?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay, well, I mean, the only reason why maybe people may have heard Cherry is they did a, Aerosmith did a thing with her in some Aerosmith publicity stuff in the 90s. Cherry was featured in the old Legal Comic Defense Fund logo, where it was a girl dressed up like a Statue of Liberty, and she was put in a big no symbol that said "fuck censorship," and that only lasted a little bit long until the "fuck censorship" promotion was censored. Yeah, so now it just says "f star 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 censorship." Anyway, so Cherry was originally called Cherry Pop-Tart, was just a 20-issue comic series starting in the 80s. It actually, the Pop-Tart was later dropped from the title because of
Kellogg's. Yep.
Yeah. She's still referred to as her...
Tony the Tiger thought she's great, though.
She's still referred to as Cherry Pop-Tart within it. But it was just a 20-issue series going from the 80s up until about 2000. It was distributed... It was published by Kitchen Comics, Last Chance Comics, Last Gasp Comics. And those comic book groups didn't really publish anything. You guys ever heard of Cocaine Man or Omaha? Or anything like that? I mean, apparently drug-eccentric comics back in the 80s were somewhat popular in the underground and are fetching a pretty penny these days. But... anyway, so getting full circle to this particular issue, why I busted out this issue, because it was one of my favorite issues, because the artwork on Cherry is always really good. It's very Archie-esque.
Mm-hmm. you're giggling over there, Matt, but you see it.
Well, he has seen it.
And he hasn't seen it with...
even though he's...
I haven't seen it with the 3D glasses.
Yes, this is a 3D
issue. It's worthwhile.
This is a 3D issue. You're trying these glasses. And it's actually pretty darn good. Now, I haven't seen anything more modern in a print edition 3D, but this uses the old-fashioned blue and red lenses. Put it on. It's an entertaining story. The art's pretty decent. So it's definitely... Cherry had a higher quality art than most adult comics. And that's what... made me want to collect all the issues that were out there, because to be honest, some of the adult comics that I was collecting, I'd only get like one or two issues, and I put it down because the artwork was pathetic.
Yeah.
But Cherry was definitely worth it.
Hey, Matt, close your mouth when you're reading that book.
I was just gonna say it's kind of hard to read the words with all the boobs on the page.
You mean the penises?
What? I don't even see those.
If you see a Cherry at all and you're of age, pick it up. They're just fun reads. Though it's very hard to find adult comics at shows these days. Though if you do ask someone at the counter if they have any, typically they'll say no, but then you end up having a conversation with the shopkeep for about 10 minutes about what they had available.
That doesn't make me want to ask. I saw this one. Just imagine. Well,
we never really talked about the content of them.
You talk about what you do with them?
No. No, that's all implied. I've had several good conversations about the artist and the original creator of Cherry, Larry Welts. Apparently, he's just, at the end of the day, he's just kind of a crazy guy who just loved writing smut, and he did a good job of it. But apparently, that's why he doesn't really do anything anymore. He just lives out in Roswell.
Well, of course he does
these days. So, So if anyone's looking for something risque, Cherry, particularly number 11, if you can find it with the glasses, pick it up.
If not, they're just the blue and red 3D glasses, like the old school paper ones. So.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, we are going to move on to the Indy Turnpike. And this week on the Indy Turnpike, I'm going to talk about Homecoming Number 1 from Aspen Comics. It's written by David Wall, also with Scott Wobdell.
You love your Aspen Comics.
Well, I do. And we'll kind of get to that here in a second. Pencils on this, pencils and inks actually, were by Emilio Lazo, and colors by Brett Smith and Stephanie Renee. With the cover on this one, I got cover B, which was done by Mike DeBalfo. Now, Kevin and I did talk about Aspen last week, and this is just one more reason why I speak so highly about this publisher. The quality of their books overall is fantastic, and this one is not any different. The premise on this book is there's a girl named Celeste who she and her mother disappeared 10 years ago. No evidence, no bodies or anything else, and she mysteriously appears back at the house that she used to live in after a spaceship crashed on Earth at the beginning of the issue. There's a kid there by the name of Hunter who he's a high school student. He lives in that house now with his family. She comes out of her pool naked, kind of in a Fast Times at Ridgemont High type of thing, almost, is what, when I saw the picture, it kind of reminded me of that.
Like, is she, like it's covered up?
No, she's naked, but the steam conveniently covers all the...
Oh, conveniently placed steam.
Yeah.
Okay.
Covers all the pretty parts. But she comes back. He figures out who she is all of a sudden, like, because when he moved into the house, they knew that, you know, as a kid, he
was
looked
she
it up.
10 years older, or is she the same age?
Same age as when she disappeared. Okay. And so... basically, he pretends that she's his cousin so that she can go to school with him. A little bit of a lapse there as to where the parents are in this, but I didn't care.
She's Supergirl?
Well, she is super. Basically, what you've got here is not just with her, but with all the rest of the cast in here, you've got an origin story. Basically, Celeste has come back to Earth to eliminate the rebels that nearly killed the royal family, which apparently she is now part of this royal family. She's got some kind of superpowers. There's a superpowered demon that comes in. It's something called a striker. It's this demon-looking thing. In fact, if you guys want to peek through there, go for it. You get to see that she's more than just human. She's got some kind of like super strength mixed with some energy powers, force fields, force blasts, that kind of stuff.
Alien stuff.
Yeah, and... This striker attacks her while she is at, like, the homecoming prep meeting with Hunter and his four friends. And all his friends get injured in the attack. She's able to protect herself and Hunter. And so they're on the verge of death. She takes everybody plus Hunter up to the ship. The four friends are then put in, like, this chamber that kind of reminds me of the thing that Luke Skywalker was in on Hoth. You know, after the Wampa, like, you know, almost mm-hmm. took his head off. And that's what's healing them, but it's also making them more than human as well. So you've got a really cool origin story right off the beginning. The art's really nice. It actually shows a lot of different styles of art depending on what's happening in the book at the time. The characters are believable. I think Wall has set up some potential good story arcs in here all, you know, all at the same time. And there are a few things that could have been fleshed out a little bit more, you know, like where are the parents? There's kind of an intro with some guy who's interested in spaceships and all that. And I think I don't know if he gets killed or maybe he ends up getting superpowered too, you know, in the first two or three pages, and then you never hear anything about him again. But I didn't think that they blatantly skipped over anything that was, you know, left you feeling like, oh, what happened there? So if you like good classic superhero type stories, I think this is a good one for anybody.
Do you think she'll be elected homecoming queen now that she's going back to school?
Well, I don't know if school is going to keep going now that half the school is demolished.
The gymnasium is a little bit destroyed. I don't know if they'll have the dance at.
But I'm sure if she showed up there naked out of the pool at the school, she'd probably be a shoo-in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, there's nothing in this book that's going to shock you with something you haven't seen before. But what they do with all these things that you've seen before is they do them in a really good, entertaining way. And it's good storytelling. So, you know, Aspen, I think, has another winner on their hands with this book. So that's it for the Indy Turnpike.
Kevin, are you going to put down that Cherry comic anytime soon?
I just
I gotta go to the bathroom.
So we are moving on to a new segment, which has yet to really have an official title, but for now we're just calling it the interwebs.
Yeah, pretty much, browsing the internet, there's tons of interesting sites relating to comic books, nerddom, everything in between. So figured we'd start sending some out there and letting you guys know of some cool sites that we've come across.
You know, the coolest site I found, though, is drunkoncomics.com.
Drunkoncomics.com is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I have to say it.
I hear that if you go to drunkoncomics.com, girls will like you more.
And you know, if you go to drunkoncomics.com, you can hear this podcast of us talking about drunkoncomics.com.
Mm-hmm.
It comes full circle that way.
Well, and it might even create like some kind of like time, space rift in there. I don't know.
And maybe a hot naked chick will fall into your pool.
From
the interwebs.
Wow, we pretty much lost.
Yeah. Anyways, the website we want to, share with you all, if you haven't heard of it yet, is gutters.com.
It's the-gutters.com.
And this is a website. They update it Monday, Wednesday, Fridays with pretty much a comic. It's a comic strip.
It's a one-page satire of news and events that have happened in the comic book industry.
There's stuff from talking about when Schism was going down in the Marvel Universe.
That
and
was
the jokes
awesome.
Captain America, Batman movies, comic cons, writers. Kirkman can do no wrong.
They don't pull any punches. It's satire at some of its finest. And then at the bottom of the page, they always have commentary from one of the people that work there who will talk about the news event or the article or what it's by. They've got artists that come from the comic book industry who are illustrating it, but almost all the scripts are written by one of their lead writer, Sommer.
Yeah.
Sommer.
Well, we got to meet a couple of the guys that worked on that at Cherry Capital.
Yeah, they're... They also do the online comic Looking for Group, which has been it started off as kind of a parody of World of Warcraft, but it's really turned into a much deeper story, a lot more interconnection, and it's really awesome. But back to the gutters.
Yeah, the gutters, like I said, hands down, if you like reading comic books, you will understand this humor, and all of them are humorous. And you may even learn a little bit more of what's going on in the industry. I can't tell you enough times I've gone Monday, Wednesday, Friday, said, oh, it's one of these days I need to click on the website, see what's going on. And it'll be something out of the blue that I was like, oh, that's interesting to learn. And that was pretty damn funny in how they presented it. And then, of course, they get into their commentary explaining what it was about. So, like I said, go to the-gutters.com. We'll throw the link up on our website. Check it out. Won't be disappointed.
Yeah, I don't go there that often, but you guys normally send me a link for one that you know I'll particularly enjoy.
Would you say this is like a once a week visit, a twice week visit?
I usually go every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. They update very regularly and early in the morning, so by the time I get to work 8-9 o'clock, I can get on there and it's
company
already
time.
Up. Yeah, no doubt. I mean,
but I'd say also once a week at the least, because like I said, their comic strips are like on point with the news that's going on in the industry.
They're very current. Yeah, they're very, very topical, very current, and it's just funny. And like I said, it's satire. So they're making fun of people. They're making fun of comics. They're making fun of the conventions that they use. But I think there's a lot that can be learned from satire. So go check them out.
Sweet. So, cool. Well, that kind of takes us, actually, speaking of trying to be topical, into our news and notes. There wasn't a whole bunch of stuff out there this week that I really wanted to talk about, except for the biggest news, obviously, was on August 12th, the industry lost one of the legends, Joe Kubert. He was 85, I believe. He was born in 1926. Amazing man. He's most well known as far as his artwork from Sergeant Rock and from Hawkman. He did create a number of other things as well. There was a comic book called Tor. He did Son of Sinbad, the Viking Prince. He did a number of things. He did work for DC too, I believe, as I think it was like one of their head of operations for a number of years during that, or what was it? Director of publications, I guess it was. The biggest thing besides what he did as far as his drawing and contributions to the individual books is his school of art. And I think, you know, when you look back at what he did, it's more than just what he did, but he taught so many other people how to do what they did. I mean, you look at his sons, Andy and Adam, who are both fantastic artists in their own right, but yet he continued to share, and that school continues to go and give on. So, you know, I just wanted to give a nod to, you know, the loss of a great man in the industry that we really love. And I think he's touched that industry more than most people ever really even know. So that's the sad news. One other little thing, I kind of threw some stuff up on Twitter here saying, you know, ask us something. What would you like us to ask? And we got two questions that were basically same question, but kind of said in two different ways. The one question said, what would you recommend to someone reading their first comic?
Okay.
And the other question said, I'm going to start getting comics more when I've moved. What would you recommend? That person has been away from comics for a while, still a big fan. Now, she actually put on there that she's not a fan of DC. She likes Marvel and loves Image.
Okay.
So, you know, with those things in mind, what kind of general tips would you give for somebody who's either reading their first comic book or somebody who's coming back in?
Well, if you're going to read your first comic trying to break in, I'd talk to people at the comic book store and let them know what your interests are.
Absolutely.
Do you like sci-fi? Do you like superheroes? Do you like magic?
Do you like horror?
Fantasy? Do you like horror? There's probably a book that is going to cover the genre that you are interested in reading. And I think that the hardworking people at your local comic book store are probably your best bet to get a feel for something specific to your interests.
I think that's probably the best recommendation that anybody can have. Now, if you're asking us where you should start.
I would say one of the things that Marvel has come out with is the point ones, and they're made the point ones for listeners just like you. Like, those are stepping points. They're self-contained issues that gets you to have a little bit of knowledge of the characters of that book. And then you can jump into the series, because usually the next story arc is starting right after those.
How often do they release those?
It depends on the
series.
Series, because like I saw a point two, point one, and a point two for Avenging Spider-Man, which I was like, wait, what? You know, but Avenging Spider-Man.
Okay,
but it seems like normally you'll get about 1.1 issue a year, mm-hmm. kind of it. It's like you have your annuals and you have your point ones,
yeah.
you know, outside the regulars.
Well, and also, if you are a Marvel fan out there, a good starting on point is going to be when Marvel Now is released at the end of the AVX series in just a couple months here. It might be a good starting on point. Or pick up, they're already out there, pick up where at the beginning of AVX, and then you'll kind of be on par for where we're moving to.
And I'm one of these people where, like, I like to know all the backstory. I really don't like buying trade paperbacks, but they're a great way of getting you caught up. Tony and I have talked about Walking Dead because, you know, within a couple weeks, we each ripped through all 16 trade paperbacks on those.
Yeah, trade paperbacks are a really great way, particularly also if you want to get in the comic book industry and you want to read some of the classics, the ones that everyone's talking about, the highlights, Frank Miller's The Dark Knight, Returns, or... The Watchmen, or V for Vendetta, or even the Sandman series. Those you can all find in trade paperback, and pretty cheaply. You can get them at a local comic book store, or a bookstore, online.
What I've been tipping my cap to is looking at your AVX. I picked up a few issues of Valiant. They actually give you a summary of what's been happening in previous issues. And
most comics do, not all though.
Yeah, well, I picked up Green Lantern Corporate Red Lantern the other day, and they had none of that, and I was a little bummed by that. Like, I'm going into it blind, and that's why, like, when I've been going into the shop lately, I've been just picking things up that have had only a small run. Like, I just recently picked up a Harbinger by Valiant.
Yeah. And which, by the way, I still want to read that. I haven't.
It's good. Doing a little research, I didn't know that this was actually kind of a reboot of the series that was done in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But, that's really cool that they do that, and I would encourage all the publishers to do that, because I think that's helpful for someone who may have heard of a comic book character or story arc, and they can pick it up and kind of get back into it. So hopefully more people do that. Maybe what I just picked up with those two DC titles, maybe that was just they didn't want to do that, or they skipped over.
I would also say, sorry to interrupt.
No,
is pick up an independent publishing book. Something that I wish when I was younger I was told to do that. There's so much more artists, so much more better stories. Not to say the stories are always better than the mainstream, but seriously, independent books, I've been trying to get into more.
They'll push the envelope.
Well, yeah. And the bonus with indie books is that they aren't tied to 50 years of continuity.
Yeah.
You know, for people that don't have a preference on DC, Marvel, or Image, I mean, DC did just reboot everything. You've got max 12 issues to catch up, you know. On things with DC, you know, but
and issue zero is coming out right now.
Yeah, but there's also something to be said. You know, I mean, if you're reading your first comic book, there's nothing wrong with jumping into the middle.
Mm-mm. You know, you'll figure it out pretty quickly. And if not, talk to people who love this kind of stuff. Ask us a question. We'll give you a history on who's doing what and how they got to where they're at.
You know, and I think one of the best things that somebody can do if they really aren't sure what they should read. They should listen to our podcast.
They should listen to our podcast.
And then, you know, pick one of the books that we talk about, because that's actually, and go to listen to other podcasts too. Go do some, you know, look up on, you know, if you don't have somebody local, you don't have a local shop, or you don't have a convention that you can go to, and you're going to be ordering something off online, or you're going to order, you know, a digital book through like Comixology or one of those other guys out there, you know, do some research, you know. But now, to be a little bit more specific, for, you know, one of our biggest supporters of the show, who asked, what should she buy when she starts going back? So no DC, likes Marvel and loves Image. What would you guys suggest? With that being the only thing that you know so far?
I would say I'd jump on board here with Avengers, because Hickman's taken over, right? Nick Hickman's taken over the Avengers, or is he taking over? I don't know. But I would also pick up whatever Bendis is writing. I'd probably pick that up. He's not let me down very much here in the last few years.
So. I think the one writer in Marvel that you can't go wrong with is Rick Remender. And so the Uncanny X-Force series, just dark, gritty, gruesome. But, you know, and if you have an interest in X-Men, I think out of all the X-Men titles, this is the only one that's self-contained. It has not had any kind of crossover into the AVX. Mm-hmm. Well written. You don't get lost by all these other characters in and out. Well, why is that one over there? What, it doesn't matter.
Except Phantom X is dead, remember?
Yeah.
one last piece of advice here is, if you are trying to get back into comics, it can be an expensive hobby. And my suggestion would be, if you find a couple other friends who are like you and want to get into it, each of you pick up a book a month. Now you have three books to read, or, you know, two or three books with your friends, and just share them. You know, it's kind of like socialism, but cooler, because you get to read comic books. And so find a couple buddies, get a list together of what you think you'd like to read, and buy them, and then share them. I mean, that's kind of what we do.
And lastly,
except for Derek, who has to buy his own copy so he can, like, pretend to sell it someday.
And ultimately, if you can't honestly decide what you want to buy, just look at the cover art and just judge the book by its cover.
Unless it's Space Punisher.
All right.
Yeah. One other thing, though. Image, for people that are looking for a book from Image, The Walking Dead. It's pretty fantastic. Mind the Gap has been a good series. I'm trying to think what else I'm reading from there. Grim Leaper, but that's a mini series. I think Mind the Gap's a mini series too. But I mean, Images,
mini series actually are pretty good starting points too for people.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you see that it's going to be a 4-issue series, that's a real good way, because you can at least familiar yourself with somebody's art and somebody's writing.
Well, I mean, we've talked about Deadpool Kills the Universe. And yeah. We've talked about Space Punisher. Go Frank. There's my shout out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of great stuff. And honestly, I think Image really has done. I think this year they've probably been the best overall publisher as far as putting out the best quality stories.
So yeah, you big. Has anyone picked up any Spawn lately? How's that series doing?
I don't know. It's still on the shelf.
I mean, is it still on the shelf because McFarlane's the president of the company?
Probably. Although Savage Dragon's still out there.
Anyone read that?
Yeah. I read the first Rockin' issue. And the second issue? Yeah, I don't know. But no, I did read that. I like that. You know, there's a ton of stuff, but really the best thing you can do is talk to somebody. Second best thing to do is just listen to us.
I like the idea of talking to the shopkeeper. Definitely. Yeah.
So, all right. So that does it for news and notes. Last segment of the day we got today is booze in a book. And I'm going to pair something that you wouldn't normally think of drinking with, and that's peanuts. Number one of four, released by Kaboom Studios, based on the work of Charles Schulz, written and drawn by a litany of creators in here, along with some original comic book strips in here. Now, for this comic book, I am going to pair it with a bottle of Cerise from Founders Brewing Company here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The beer is made with cherries, has a 6.5% alcohol content, and like the book, it is sweet, but not disgustingly so. You know, at the end of both the beer and the book, you're going to feel happy and you wouldn't mind having another. So that's my booze in the book for this week, guys.
All right. Good. With that, we kind of have a wrap with this podcast. So yeah.
Go find us on all the places, like the Twitter and the Facebook.
And the drunkoncomics.com.
Yeah. Our booth at Detroit Fan Fair.
Coming soon, our MySpace page.
God. You know, technically, we did start a Google Plus, but we haven't done anything. I don't know how to use the damn thing. So, you know,
in the years of Futurama, we'll just advertise directly into your dreams. So,
I like that idea.
Yeah, okay. But give us feedback, by the way, guys. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us, drunkoncomics@gmail.com. You know, so we like hearing feedback. We like our fans. Sometimes our fans get special things in the mail. Sometimes they don't. So find out if you're going to be special or not. Talk to us.
Hey, special.
All right, with that, that's a wrap, and we will see you guys next week. I'll pull the Derek and say goodbye. Say goodbye, Matt.
Adios, amigos.
Say goodbye, Kevin.
Ciao.
Say goodbye, Derek.
Goodbye, Derek!
And this is the first podcast where we had all the four Musketeers.
Fabulous Four. I mean,
the Fantastic Four.
Fearsome Four.
I'm Tony, and you guys have a good week.
Keep reading those comics.